Oh, the shape up or get. If you've let all the fans down.
Can we not lock this?
It's a fact. I am not playing mind games. I am talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything. Religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome along to Tuesday night's Team 33. I'm Raf Giallo. As always, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Team 33. We're also on Facebook and also on iTunes, although at the moment we're just trying to fix some of our iTunes issues. So just keep an eye on our Twitter account for any updates on that. Now, I have Jonathan Higgins in studio, and the last time we were kind of within the same vicinity was a very interesting chat with Marcus Babbel. I was still a little ill from, I think it's man flu, I'm not quite sure.
I think you had version 2 though, didn't you? Really?
Yeah, I had a stronger version of man flu. But anyway, I was recording the Marcus Babbel interview from my kitchen. I'd been organising it over a couple of weeks and then unfortunately got struck down. Jonathan Higgins was able to come in though and chaired the start of it and stayed in for the whole thing as well. This was on Wednesday of last week. Now, it's very coincidental, Jonathan, because it's Liverpool, Bayern Munich as well, and Babbel is probably a man who can actually bridge both of those, along with Didi Hamann. I know at the start of the interview, you were beside yourself almost with excitement as well, because yeah, this is somebody you remember.
It is, actually, yeah, and actually, without going all childish, my mum pulled out a picture of us. It was actually after the 2001 season. Liverpool had like a fan training day in the summer just to celebrate and show off the cups and stuff like that. And there's a picture of me fan-gazing into his car as himself and Didi Hamann leave the grounds of Anfield. So yeah, it was a bit of deja vu, really. To you almost pinch yourself. Yeah, but he was a pure gent. Very interesting story. Very interesting football career.
The illness was particularly.
Yeah, it was, and yeah. the mental. He kind of touched on it himself. Now he wasn't kind of boasting by any means or form, but it was such a serious illness. To be honest, I didn't even realize how serious it was, and the commitment that he must have shown to get back on. Firstly, to recover and then come back on to play professional football after that is probably one of his life.
In his own words, he never came back to 100%. He still won a league title in his final season with Stuttgart as well, which is remarkable given that I think it's something like 10% of people who get that condition die. Yeah. And, you know, he had no muscle, he had no energy. And to be able to then come back and then actually play football again is remarkable.
It's a remarkable achievement.
Now, yeah, Joe Coffey will be joining us in a little bit just to talk about, I guess, Arsenal's run in 2000 to the UEFA Cup final. But somebody on Twitter today, when I mentioned the word treble in regards to 01, questioned this and said there's only one treble. That's the 1999 one that Manchester United did 2 years earlier.
I do believe a treble is 3 items, so whatever way you look at it.
Yes, I clarified that it was a treble with a small t, because it is FA Cup, League Cup, and then the UEFA Cup run. I kind of remember the Alaves game and the 0-1 FA Cup final, because that's the 0-1 final.
That's the 0-1 final, yeah. We got bashed by Arsenal, and somehow Stefan Hancho played in goal that day as well. It was nice of him. And it was a game that Arsenal dominated from start to finish pretty much. Yeah. And
given that Liverpool, I guess, had such a proud history before that, and then obviously you would win Istanbul then a few years later, where does 0-1 fit in terms of Liverpool fans thinking? Because again, it's 3 trophies in a season. You know, you're not going to turn your nose up at that. And it wasn't exactly like Liverpool's greatest era. But is it something that's still, you know, overly fondly looked back on? Or is it something that you kind of go, well, look, it was a step towards something
else? It was probably a stepping stone at the time. It was a remarkable achievement, really, because you can't, you know, everything is football is peaks and troughs and all that. But Liverpool were in such a dark, dark age for so long. So he's kind of coming towards the end of the Spice Boys era, etc., etc. You know, Liverpool were known for the wrong reasons. They were kind of a parody almost at the time. It was so far off, and so far off where a club of Liverpool stature should be. Hulier came in after they tried the Roy Evans and joint partnership. That didn't work. Hulier took sole control after that, and he brought in a lot of investment, and a lot of foreign players came in, and obviously Marcus Babbel is one of those that came in and made a big change, and Liverpool became this mean kind of defensive unit, you know, that back six, we'll call it. Well, Vestergaard might have been a bit dodgy in goal, the back four was as good as it gets, really, from a defensive point of view. You had Babbel, Sam Hippia, Stephen Hanshaw, and then Jamie Carragher left back, and Didi Haman sitting low. Like, it was a very defensive team, but it's a stepping stone really, because we were so far away. You come back, it was a remarkable run into the season. Like, if you want to watch back drama, watch back, like, talk about the players running on the edge almost, and kind of almost fell over the line in a couple of them, because all the cup finals were so dramatic. Like, even the League Cup final earlier in the season was a dramatic penalty shootout against Birmingham. You had the FA Cup final that we just discussed. It was the smash and grab at the end with Michael Owen, and then the crazy 5-4 UEFA League, and then it got even more crazy than the scramble in the last day of the season against Charlton, to scramble over the line. And if you ever watch him back, just watch Robbie Fowler's first goal on that.
I'd be interested in your opinion though of Houllier and how he's regarded now, because you've obviously had quite a few managers since then, and some have actually come closer to winning the league than he ever did.
He finished second,
yeah. And he won a few trophies, obviously, yep. Three of them bunched into one season. How do you regard him now? With the time that's passed,
he definitely got us back in the correct way. I think it was time for him to move on when he did. Like, I think we finished seventh in 5-4-3-2, didn't get the one, and then kind of fell off the park. And you know, but he still got Champions League qualification in his last season, which was, now don't get me wrong, Steven Gerrard was probably carry the team in that towards the end of that season just to get the qualification. But the following season went on to win the Champions League, and kind of Raf. He, you know, obviously everyone loves kind of Gerard Houllier, particularly like the off-field stuff then as well. He had major heart surgery, He comes back on that magical night against Rome where we needed the victory. And you know, nobody could ever doubt his passion for the club. Like, he was a French student, came over, fell in love with the club, and came back and then managed the club, and still speaks in very kind words with the club, and still has that emotional attachment to the club. Even, you know, the high profile thing when he was, I think, Aston Villa manager, he said, "If I'm going to lose 3-0 to a team, you know, I don't mind it being Liverpool." And I've kind of cheesed off a lot of the Aston Villa fans at the time, but he definitely has a lot of love. Everybody, I think, loves him personally. I think it was kind of, this is a nice stepping stone, but it was time to upgrade then as well. So yeah, no, by and large, positive enough. Everyone remembers that tail end of the season. I think that will be his legacy that he leaves.
Yeah, there was the Stephen Kameniman piece I was reading in The Guardian. I don't know if you came across it. So he scored apparently a great goal against Celtic. It's one of those pieces they do sometimes where they look back at great goals, and They were talking about, like, he's probably not as fondly remembered as, say, Robbie Fowler, who was there around the same time. They were great mates. And then, obviously, Steven Gerrard at the end of the 90s is regarded as the saviour. And then McManaman, who's hugely talented, kind of fits somewhere in between there.
Yeah, soured himself really by the way he left.
With the transfer.
With the free transfer to Real Madrid. And it was probably bad management by the club, to be fair, to allow someone of, you know, that calibre to run down the contract. But it was like probably the right move for him personally. He went on to win a number of European Cups, a lot of trophies for Real, and you know, the fact that, you know, he's a Real Madrid legend, but he's a player that's remembered fondly. You know, he was of all the players that's gone over, he fit in really well, and you know, he was one of the star performers of that team as well in that generation. I remember the game I was over at. It was one, I think it was one of his last game at Anfield. It was a 3-2 victory over Tottenham, and the Tottenham fans were singing, "There's only one greedy so-and-so," and the cops cheered him on as well. That kind of sums up the legacy that he left. I think the further time goes on, it's a bit of a healer. The fact that he didn't join another Premiership team probably helped as well, unlike another player that joined Real Madrid. But he's kind of, as time goes on, particularly in his more high profile, being on television as well, people remember more fondly.
Yeah. So we're going to throw to the Babbel interview. The first thing you did ask him, of course, was how he ended up joining Liverpool. Apparently, unlike McManaman, he did turn down Real Madrid to get the move. So here is Babbel answering your first question. Okay, if you're listening in to the podcast version, we actually podcasted the Marcus Babbel interview separately. So just go to offball.com and you'll find that interview in full separately. Or if you just go to anywhere on the OTB website, if you just go down to the soccer section, I've pulled out one of the stories there, which is all about Christa Berg visiting him in hospital. So that's there for you to read. And then a link to the podcast is there. But if you're listening to the radio version, we are not done yet. Okay, that was the Marcus Babbel interview. Now, Joe Coffey is on the line. Jonathan Higgins had to pop out. But we were talking about 2001 and the UEFA Cup final run for Liverpool. The year before, Arsenal came almost as close as they did in the 2006 Champions League final, losing to Galatasaray in the 2000 UEFA Cup final in a penalty shootout. Davor Šuker and Patrick Vieira missing penalties. Joe, painful memories, or just is it something that actually Arsenal fans don't even really think about?
I say most Arsenal fans will remember it because it was back at a time when the UEFA Cup was still a pretty decent competition, diluted somewhat because you had, like, Arsenal got into it on the back of their second Wembley failed Champions League campaign, where they finished third in the group. It worked in the same way, but they were in a group with Barcelona, Fiorentina and AIK from Sweden. But I think it was Gabriel Batistuta that undid them, I think, at Wembley. And it was, you know, part of that whole failed Wembley experiment where they played there for 2 years and didn't get out of the group. So they ended up in the UEFA Cup. Yeah, I remember the final. The final was played in Denmark. And actually, I have two Danish cousins, and one of them ended up going to the game. And I remember requesting a match program from the final, which I still have, Raph.
All right.
But I don't actually have it. It's back home in Castlebar. But yeah, so I still have that. But what I remember vividly was the street battles between the two sets of fans, or part of the sets of fans anyway, before and after the match. And then,
because
obviously,
I think around that period, wasn't there an issue? There was, I think, some Leeds fans actually got one.
I think it was the time of a Leeds fan was murdered, and I think it was because Leeds had played Galatasaray in the semi-final.
Yeah.
And I think it occurred in the away leg. I might be wrong there now, but if my memory serves me right, that's what happened.
Yeah.
And so then there was, you know, a bit of tension around the Arsenal Galatasaray game. But yeah, I mean, for the final itself, I don't remember a huge amount other than it wasn't much of a memorable game. I think Arsenal might have had one decent chance for the whole match. But Arsenal have been quite swashbuckling leading up to it. And at the same time, Galatasaray hadn't actually lost a game either. But, like, you know, Arsenal, I remember the quarterfinals because Ray Parter scored a hat-trick away against Werder Bremen, which was unusual. And they dished out some decent beatings along the way. Deportivo La Coruña.
I think they beat them. Decent at the time.
They were decent. They beat them 5-1 at Highbury. But yeah, it was, you know, like it was one of two finals that Wenger could have won. I mean, but ultimately it was a forgettable game. It was just poor, and then we ended up being undone by penalties in a season where, after what had gone the season before, where we'd ran Manchester United so close in the FA Cup and in the Premier League. It was a really forgettable season for Arsenal. The United cantered home to the league title, and we did nothing in the FA Cup or League Cup. So the UEFA Cup was our only hope. And yeah, it was a disappointing game in the end for ourselves. You know, well beaten on penalties.
It's one of the few things you can kind of. Well, in the early, I suppose, the first decade of Wenger's reign that you can kind of look on and think they never really made the mark in Europe in the way they probably should have. I mean, they should have probably won a Champions League given the quality of the squad they had at one point. Particularly 04, for me, feels like a kind of missed opportunity given, especially, it was a Porto-Monaco final in the end.
Yeah, I think, the problem for Arsenal was that they'd always be the odd disappointed. Like, I mean, in those early years, their Champions League endeavours were marred by, you know, naive performances, particularly at Wembley, where they struggled to make Wembley feel like a home ground, and that's why they inevitably ended up moving back to Highbury. I think if you look at the Champions League, I mean, yeah, I think everyone would agree that the 0-3-0-4 campaign was the missed opportunity. I mean, they put themselves in a fantastic position against Chelsea in the first leg, and then, you know, didn't put them away in the second leg and were killed off by, I think, was it a Graeme Lasso goal?
Wayne Bridge.
Yeah. Wayne Bridge got the goal. And yeah, I think he got it in like the 83rd minute, so there was no coming back.
Yeah.
And I mean, the one thing I remember about that game in particular was Claudio Ranieri was manager at the time, and he actually cried with happiness after that game when they beat them. And I think a lot of people thought Chelsea would go on and at least make the final of the Champions League, and then they came undone against, I think it was Monaco.
Yeah, it was Monaco on that side of the draw, yeah.
Yeah, but that was Arsenal's real missed opportunity. I think like the 2006 Champions League, while it was amazing to make the final and had some great wins along the way, the team was nowhere as good as the 0-4 team. It was the last sting of an aging, you know, Invincibles team. Most of the Invincibles team was still there, but they were on their way down past their peak.
Yeah.
So the real opportunity came in 03-04, and you know that was. But that's the beauty of the away goals as well. I mean, we were talking about that. UEFA were talking about getting rid of the away goals rule, and you know that game against Chelsea, that was the drama of it. That Chelsea got that second goal at Highbury in the 83rd minute, and it was game over.
Mm. You, just to finish off, I know last week yourself and Derek were talking about Chelsea and Manchester United. Obviously, they met last night, and again, I don't know how long Sarri's going to hang on for, but Jesus, they have massive problems. Whereas Man United, yeah, on the other hand, are actually kind of seem to be getting back to something.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, like, I mean, it's just very difficult to explain. I mean, I don't see how anyone can really explain the United renaissance. Like, as bad a job as we thought Mourinho was doing, I mean, we didn't think, nobody thought that they'd be able to string results together like this. I mean, we all agreed that they had a good team, but it is amazing the impact positive feeling and bringing back some of the old United guard can have on a side. I mean, the real challenge will, I foresee that this high United are on could well last till the end of the season and end with United winning an FA Cup and getting top four in the Champions League. The real challenge will come when it starts all over again in August, and it's trying to, you know, like, you're not, that bounce isn't going to keep going. So it'll be interesting to see what, to be honest, at the moment, Solskjaer, would be interesting to see what he does to keep it go, to keep everything fresh. But you know, it could simply be as down to keep your best players happy, play them in the positions they want to play, and everything will fall into place. I mean, he's got Pogba playing well, by and large. Didn't really have a great game in the Champions League last week, but was pretty positive against Chelsea. I mean, I didn't think that Chelsea were going to win anyway, so it's no surprise that they were beaten. I think Chelsea, I don't know what's gone wrong there, but whether it's that there's been too much, they've been trying to change their style too quickly, or that the players haven't bought into it, or that, you know, the directionless feel Chelsea have from ownership, if that's just, as we've been talking before, have just passed on to the players, and everyone just feels like they're waiting around for somebody to make a decision about the future of the club. But it is, you know, it's a listless ship, as it were, Raf.
Ah, well, sure, look, I'm sure you feel sorry for them.
Well, like, I mean, like, Chelsea have had, by and large, I mean, pretty much a decade and a half of sustained success now. So I firmly believe everything goes in cycles. And I think a time away from the limelight will be no harm at all. They'll still be knocking around. Like, unless money will come in from somewhere eventually, but until it does, I think they'll be knocking around the Champions League spots, Europa League. You know, there'll be a bit of an Arsenal about them, I think. Yeah. And but I mean, and at the moment, while Klopp is there, I think and Guardiola, I think Liverpool and City will be, and Spurs too. Well, Spurs, all this has got to do, like, they're the three managers, and you know, Solskjaer, but he's only in the job, but they're the three managers in particular that you would go, they have everything in place now to sustain themselves. The problem for Spurs is that, unlike City and Liverpool, they don't have financial backing to allow the manager to improve the team. So while I can see Klopp and Guardiola staying for another few, well, another couple of years anyway. Pochettino, massive question marks, because how long are you going to stay trying to keep a team punching above its weight if the money's not coming to Spurs? And the problem for Spurs is they're coming to a situation now where if they've been told, well, we're going to have to tighten our belts for another 4 or 5 years before the stadium starts paying for itself, how long are players like Harry Kane and Dele Alli going to stay around in the hopes that they might win? You know, as good and all Spurs are at the moment, I don't think anyone can see them winning. They have better chance winning the Champions League than they have won in the league anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah, the way the knockout stuff works.
You could always, Liverpool made the final last year, and like, fair enough, like, Liverpool have a very good team, but if you're going by first 11 alone, like, Spurs have a very strong first 11. If you're going for, like, you know, one-off games where, like, fitness wasn't an issue and all this kind of stuff, you would argue that Spurs first 11 is very, very strong and could give anybody a game on the day. And certainly, like, you know, if you're looking at Liverpool last year, you go, yeah, Spurs could definitely do that kind of thing again. But in terms of keeping this long-term program going, it's going to be difficult unless money starts coming in. Pochettino isn't going to be a man like Wenger, where he stays in the club for 23 years.
No, I think
or whatever. 23 years. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Nobody's doing that anyway.
Also, as an aside, Raph, did you see that Wenger got this lifetime achievement?
Yeah, the Laureus Sports Award.
And you see how Jose Mourinho, they were playing videos, and Jose Mourinho had an unbelievable amount of praise for him. He said he was one of the greatest living managers in history, and that the Invincibles team was as perfect as was almost the perfect team. And then they asked Wenger afterwards what he thought, and was he surprised, which was he more surprised by, the award or the praise from Mourinho? And he said that, then he laughed and he said, well, the Mourinho interview is the perfect example. I'm paraphrasing here, but like, it's the perfect example of how time is a great healer when it comes to football rivalries.
Ah, yeah. Nobody actually really hates each other. It's just the thick of the battle. But anyway.
It's the heat of the battle, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think.
Well, I don't know. Brian Clough and and John Revy might be the exception.
Okay, that's a little different. I think that did cross into like purely personal territory as well, although I'm not sure how accurate the book was about. But anyway, I think that sums us up for this week. Joe, thanks for coming along, taking us back, Raph, to the 2000 UEFA Cup final.
And Raph, I'm looking forward to, I have to say, it's been a while since I've looked forward to a match as much as I'm looking forward to Liverpool United on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to discussing in depth next week with you, Raph.
Good stuff. Well, we'll see you then anyway. That's it for this week's show. The Marcus Babbel interview you'll find on the Off the Ball podcast section. So I hope you all enjoy that. Take it away, Johan.